Thanks, Alan. Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Dan. I'm a member of the Hill Group in Uptown Toronto. My sobriety date is October 14th, 1988. And as Alan said, this is my sixth international conference. The first one, my wife, who is here today, Joan, a member of the Al-Anon family groups, we went to, was in Seattle in 1990, and we were hooked. We went to the big meeting at the Seattle Dome that night, and I was a year and a half sober and wondering what I got myself into, and there was an overwhelming feeling of joy and well-being. There was an overwhelming feeling that I was going to be okay, and I've gotten that from every meeting that I've come to at the internationals, and I'm looking forward to the one tonight. This one looks extremely large to me. It was a lot larger than San Antonio. I think they say close to 70,000 people. So I'm grateful, I love the theme of the conference, Happy, Joyous, and Free. 80 years ago, Bob met a guy named Bill Wilson, and they sat down to talk, and they sat down for 4 hours. And what did they do is what we do at every meeting. It's only what we do. We listen and we identify. We listen and we identify. Both of them shared exactly how they felt. One alcoholic talking to another, and here we are 80 years later sitting here. Just amazing. I like the topic of today, the precious quality of humility. There's a lot of great definitions in the program. We've heard them and hear them often. Humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. Humility is being teachable. The one I like is I don't have all the answers. But the one I think really affected me and when I first came in, because I came in with a huge ego and low self-esteem, was that humility is simply taking a modest opinion about my self-importance. And that's what I've been trying to learn and has evolved over a period of years. I think the most important thing we do at any AA meeting is to qualify, because that may be the only thing a newcomer might hear and understand and identify with. I drank for 32 years, and I came from Montreal originally, a great family, and with the perspective of doing some inventories when I got to AA, what I found out is why I drank. It was simply, there was a fear of people, which is a shyness. I had that ingrained focus on getting your attention, getting your approval. I always was thinking, what will they think? What will they think? And when I didn't get your attention and approval, my whole problem has been my reaction towards life. I reacted and overreacted in certain ways. I might go deeply internal. I might lash out. So when I didn't get your approval at 14 and then moving into 16, the way I looked at it is I'll do it on my own. I started to work when I was 16. I found it drinking when I was 14. That drink was over 50 years ago today, but I can remember it as if it was yesterday. And that is profound. I can remember what that first drink did to me. What it did was actually freed me from myself. We talked about Bill and Bob meeting a connectiveness. And what I found in AA is over a period of time is that the opposite to addiction is not sobriety. The opposite to addiction is connection. And I disconnected early in my life, and off I went on my own. And I wasn't an alcoholic right away, but it took me a number of years to get there. But Montreal in the 60s was great. And still is great. I met my wife in 1970. We got married in 1971. The start of a long-term relationship. We celebrated 44 years this year. And you can thank AA and Al-Anon for that. And also, my problem was, relating to people. And in that relationship, one thing we did right at the... We made a pact when we got married. Though... First one to leave the marriage first gets the kids. And That will get you. That will get you through tough times. But what happened later was I moved along and my drinking progressed. And my drinking progressed to the point where one day my wife was the first to hit bottom in our house. And she, in 1988, gave me the three options after talking to some AA members. Go to AA, go to treatment, or get out. And it was at that point in my life that it could have been a week later, a week earlier, nothing might have happened, but that was the day. That was the moment of clarity that I made a call to the local intergroup office, and they told me it was a meeting that night and that I should go. I talked to the woman there. She was so kind. Thank God we have people manning the phones. And if you haven't done the phones yet, try it. It's wonderful. And I went to my first meeting that night, and I was standing at the door, outside the door of a hill. We have a big home group. It's about 250 people. And I was standing, and right up to the last minute, my choice would have been to drink. That would have been my choice. That somehow I got into the meeting that night. What is that? I guess that's grace. What's God's grace? God's grace is power. And the power to get in saved my life, because I was unwilling to go into my first meeting, and I did not have a desire to drink, but I did when I came out that night. It was the way I was welcome. It was the start of my spiritual life. The men and women who took me aside, who shared their experience, strength, and hope, who gave me their phone numbers, who then one guy gave me a lift home. And the speaker that night, we were talking with a gentleman from Seattle outside, that all we do when we get up here at the podium anytime is hope, to be able to give a message of hope. And the acronym from HOPE is hearing another people's experience, hearing other people's experience. And I heard a gentleman that night who nailed it right between my eyes, because he talked about the shame, the guilt, the self-condemnation, the self-hatred he had when he walked into these rooms, and that was me. And then he threw at the lure, and then he says, I don't feel that way today. And he says, why don't you come along with us? So that was the start of my experience in AA, and I started to go to meetings. I joined a home group. I got a sponsor. I got active. But most importantly, I was told that I would not achieve any amount of sobriety if I didn't gain any sort of humility. And I think that first part of it came to me, and when I did an inventory, it was the first time when I wrote down on paper, and I had to do it because I was 11 months sober, and I was just feeling terrible. And that's because I had not taken a look at myself. But when I put down on paper that time, that day, and I looked out into that fourth column, what I saw was my alcoholism. I saw the reason why I drank. And it was the first time that I had honestly in my whole life taken a look at myself. And when I shared that with another human being in step five, that was the first time that I went eyeball to eyeball with another human being and said, this is really Dan. This is me. This is the truth. This is the truth about where I am in my recovery and what I did before. And for me, that was sort of moving that ego over just a little bit. And it's not that amazing why it says in our literature is that's the first time that we move out of isolation. But because before that, I was with my secrets. I was going, those secrets, I was going to my grave. And for the first time, I had opened up and I shared that with another human being. And to me, that just sort of allowed me to become a member of AA. Moving along in the program, and I know a lot of people in this room might laugh a little bit, but where I achieved a lot of humility, I thought, was being an attender of business meetings. You know, and that usually gets a little bit of, and business meetings, I went to my first business meeting. I was shocked to know that the guy who had one day had the same boat as somebody who had 45 years. I mean, what kind of democracy is that? other people having the right to their opinions? You know, I couldn't believe what was going on there. But little by little, over a period of years, you know, I found out that there is an ultimate authority, and it's not me. And there is an ultimate authority, and over the years of going to business meetings for 27 years, what I found out is this. I don't have to worry. The group always gets it right. Even if it gets it wrong the odd time, they'll vote it back in. So I don't have to worry. I'll have to sit back and maybe if something comes up, quote a tradition or something like that. But that's where some humility came into my life. But really, it was getting through those amend steps and stepping up to the plate and taking, taking the actions to clear up the wreckage of the past, sitting down with my wife, my children, and saying I was wrong. What can I do to make it right? This is trying to let people see Dan, the real Dan, the authentic Dan, not the Dan that I wanted you to do. I found that the biggest problem in my life was that I had a big mouth. You know, I had a lot of opinions. And the sponsor and people in the group said, we have a tradition, we have a step for that. It's called Step 10 and Step 10 Tradition. AA has no opinion on outside issues, and Dan doesn't have to have. I've got a lot of opinions on outside issues. A lot of opinions on everything, but all I have to do with my children, with my wife, and it, to wait for the magic words. And the magic words are, what do you think? Before I'm moving into straightening out the world. One of my mantras is KMS, keep mouth shut. When I do that over a period of a week, I've got a great week. A shut mouth gathers no foot. And I find that by sitting back and think, you know, my first thought is my own self-will. My second thought is usually God's will. It's that pause that really is the key. I don't have to get back to anybody within 24 hours. I don't have to send an email. I don't have to get on the phone. I could do that in a day or two. My daughter sent me an email about 2 or 3 months ago, which I thought was a little bit hostile. I thought it was a little bit critical. And I put it into draft. And I went down and I read it the next morning, and it's as if she got in there overnight and changed that email. That wasn't a call-up. So what happens is it's just like coming to an AA meeting. I come to AA meetings, and I've got a series of challenges and problems. That's called life. When I leave an AA meeting, I still have the same problems and challenges, but I see them differently. It's a change of perception. It's a change of perspective. And it's because of people here sharing their experience, hearing other people's experiences. And when I can do that, I get into a period where I can humbly try to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous while we're all here. I don't know about you. I can go to bed at some nights, and I could be just perfectly calm. And I've done a journal. I do a step 10. I could see the problems that my defects today are all based on, right down to three things, impatience, and tolerance, control. It always gets down to control, always looking to control outcomes. Pushing and shoving, and I think I'll get it my way. But I can wake up in the morning after a beautiful sleep, and it's all there. And I don't know who gets into here at night, but there's some bitterness, some resentment. They have a step for that. It's called step 11. You know, upon awakening, you know, if I can say the third 7 and 11 step prayer, take 5 or 10 minutes of meditation, what happens to me is I can go out. And what I do that day is usually I see the world differently. I hear the world differently. I respond differently. I don't react or overreact. I could just be Dan that day. Carrying the message is really what we're all here about today. We're here to listen. We're here to identify. And I think the most important, really, job that I have is I've done work in the home group, and I've gone outside the group and intergroup and conferences in Toronto and all those things, but I always get back, no matter what we do, we always get back to the home group. The home group is where the alcoholics show up and where the newcomers. And I think the highest form of 12-step work is right at the door. I'll just finish with meeting those newcomers coming in, taking time to say hello to them. My sponsor, who's a guy from Dublin, a very spiritual guy, he says, engaging the unengaged. Looking across the floor, we all have them at our home group. Somebody who's there, a man or woman who's there on their own. Walking across the floor, shaking hands with them, making them feel welcome, I think is the most important thing we do here. And you're surprised 2 or 3 weeks later when they come back and shake your hand. At my home group last week, a guy came through the door. It was his first meeting. is an elderly gentleman. He says, my wife made me come here tonight. I said, that's a familiar story. I mean, we're all here for somebody made us come here, really. And then he told me that he was 85. It was his first meeting. So we got him a seat up front, and in our home group, we give out chips. It's a big group, lots of newcomers, for 9, 6, 3, 1 month, and a desire chip not to drink that day. So as they get the desire chips, this guy gets up, Russell, to get his first chip. He goes up with his cane, and the energy in the room changed and shifted. People could sense that this was his first meeting. And they just, the energy, they give him an applause. It was resounding. And he said he never felt as welcome in his life afterwards. There was a woman who went up and got a three-month chip. And she went up with a little boy. He was about 5 years old. She was in her 30s. And so they gave the secretary gave the chip to the little boy. As they turned around and he was walking down, both of them had smiles on their faces that would light up this room. Those two things to me, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. Really, that's what we do here. And to do that, I always have to remind myself that the self-importance that I came in with, slowly by the steps working me over a period of years, slowly has disappeared, minimized. Some days it's there, I have to shove that ego aside. Deflation of ego at death is number one on a daily basis. But by coming here and listening to you and trying to carry the message to other alcoholics, you know, I have a great life today. My life is tremendous externally because I have an internal life. My internal life, I did the work on myself. I continue doing myself, and that allows me to move out externally. We travel. We have a grandson out in Western Canada that we love, son and daughter. And all of this is because of you. You've given me everything, and I am so privileged to be here, sitting in as a thorn between two roses here today. And I want to thank you so much for listening today. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Dan. This is picking up every little... I'm going to put it on some paper and see if that helps. We have two more speakers. When I got the email for this, it said, you know, will you moderate the panel on humility? And I thought, yeah, I'll be great. And, so I told my friends... And you know they all laughed at me. And my... is Austrey in the room? Is Austrey here? I don't see Austrey. So Austrey was a recent past delegate from Panel 62. That's going to come back around in a second. And I've worked with a lot of delegates over my time in service. And for some reason, she's my delegate. I don't know why. But she's the one that, you know, really was meant the most to me. I saw her yesterday, and I told her, come to my panel. It's on... humility. And she laughed in my face and walked away. She came back, but... And that's why I love her so much. Okay, so we are moving on to our next speaker, Pam. She is on your far left at the end of the table. Pam is from Inez, Texas, and that is outside of Victoria. Originally from... Tell me again, I've misspelled it. Connecticut. I can't spell Connecticut. Originally from Connecticut. She got sober in Austin in 1996 and was a delegate for Panel 62, so she was a peer delegate to Austrey. And for those of you who don't know, Panel 62 means 2012. So she has recently rotated out of being a delegate and probably needs stuff to do. So, you know, if you guys need a long-distance sponsor, you know, there you go. Pam, thank you.
Thanks, Alan. And again, my name is Pam. I always give my last name Jerica. I am an alcoholic. And it's funny, my friends gave me the same response. They laugh at me when I was talking, you know, about humility, because I just think God has a great sense of humor. Because this would, you know, when I was first asked if I would be willing to share, I said, yes, I would. Because I have learned... then I never say no to AA because I just haven't. That was the way I was taught, and as a result, I've had wonderful, wonderful experiences. being the delegate was probably one of the most up until this point. I mean, this is pretty awesome to be here. But then I got my topic of humility, and I just kind of like, I'm not going to say anything, you know, because then it, well, what are you talking on? And I'm just, humility, you know, and it, and I, they start laughing, but I understand that. You know, it's been an ongoing joke ever since I got that email. But in any sense, I'm really glad to be here, and I'm glad you're all here. I have to write things down, because I get very scattered, and I jump from subject to subject, so bear with me here. But, you know, when I first started attending meetings and over the years and the topic of humility comes up, I'm just like, oh, no, not again, you know, because it's just, I just didn't understand it. I didn't understand it for many years until somebody said arrogance. If you, and that I understood, you know, that humility was really the opposite of being arrogant. And so with that in mind, then I was able to understand when they were talking about humility and practicing that. And then, you know, with working the steps and everything else, it all came together. Am I do it perfect every day? Absolutely not, but I am human. So I like to share what's in our literature. So I did write some notes about what Bill W. explains about humility. He says, as long as we place self-reliance first, a general reliance upon a higher power is out of the question. The basic ingredient of all humility is a desire to seek and do God's will. Bill W. wrote that it is a clear recognition of what and who we really are, followed by a sincere attempt to become what we could be. A sense of personal identity is a byproduct of true humility. I'm finding out who I really am by peeling away the layers. And as the layers fall away, I am finding a new freedom, not only a freedom from self, but freedom from the demands of others. The attainment of greater humility is the foundation of each of AA's 12 steps. Each step asks humility of us. It was with grudging humility that I asked someone to first sponsor me. It was humility to ask someone, there was some humility that asked me to keep going to meetings. Each of these actions say that I need your help, and as a result, my healing progresses. It is the humility when I ask my sponsors and others for help in seeing myself as I really am. An important beginning of spiritual freedom from my defects. It is humility when I allow myself to be taught to make amends, thereby healing damaged relationships. It is humility again when I call upon God to relieve me of my defects, to show me his will and to empower me to do it. In turn, I turn to others for strength to bear the pain and sorrow and disappointment that are inevitable of all human, part of all human lives. Each of these ways, I'm saying that on my own, I could not do these things that are so necessary for my spiritual growth. This is why we say it's a WE program. The simple word we stands at the entrance to every step, reminding me that my power is limited. It reminds me that through God's help and the help of others that I gain strength to work toward the spiritual awakening, which is the final goal of the steps. We begins our journey, and humility is the nourishment that strengthens us on our way. Step three was the turning point in my sobriety in my life. It came only after the admission of complete hopelessness, ego deflation at depth. I first had to admit I was powerless over alcohol. Now I had to admit that I was powerless over myself. After this turning point, with the help of AA, I began to get a better perspective of myself. I actually began to like myself, and with this new liking came humility. In my active alcoholism, when the stimulus was humiliation, my response was denial. I lied about, trivialized, hide, or just plain ignored the humiliations. In AA, I learned that when the stimulus is humiliation or pain, a healing response is honesty or humility. And according to 12 and 12, pain is a touchstone of spiritual progress, but it also offers another option. It offers the character asset of humility as a choice and a means of growth. Humility is not something to be resisted or something to be accepted, even embraced. We learned in the 12 and 12 where humility had formerly stood as a force feeding on humble pie, now began to mean the nourishing ingredient which gave us serenity. This improved perception of humility started a revolutionary change in our outlook. Our eyes began to open to the immense values which have come straight out of painful ego puncturing. We saw failure and misery transformed by humility into priceless assets. We heard story after story how humility had brought strength out of weakness. Pain had been the price of admission into a new life, but this admission price had purchased more than what we expected. It brought a measure of humility, which we discovered to be a healer of pain and the avenue to true freedom of the spirit, which can bring us to a greater turning point in our lives when we saw humility as something we really wanted rather than something we must have. Once humility is recognized as a priceless gift, a way of life, it will be cultivated for its own sake. As Bill W. suggests in chapter on step seven, in the 12 and 12, anyone who has followed Bill's life through his writings will recognize that his problems he had when his ego threatened to get in the way of life work, especially after a few early AA successes. He finally had to accept humility for today as his objective. He tells us, there can be no absolute humility for us humans. At best, we can only glimpse the meaning and splendor of a perfect ideal. We begin to hear humility mentioned frequently. As a practical member, we come to know it, and we can feel it when we see it in others. We are much less aware of humility or certain about it in ourselves, which is all to the good. Humility is more than just a word. It is a noble essence, like truth. And while we may know it when we see it and feel it, we cannot reduce it to a mere definition. Humility is a willingness to listen for, to carry out to the best of my ability, God's will for me. It is my understanding, the implications of step seven, that I humbly ask, not demand, that God remove my shortcomings in his time, not mine. This willingness to proceed on a timetable of a higher power is a quality that most sober AAs acquire sooner or later. Being human, I am not successful on hanging on to humility. I still find myself tripping over my own ego at times with painful and embarrassing results. Humility is a willingness to accept my own imperfections for as long as they must be with me, combined with a willingness to let them go when the time comes. It is to take a personal inventory, not just once, but whenever it is needed to get the sane and healthy idea of where I stand. It is what happens when self-concern and self-importance are seen as perspective as a result of that inventory, when such character traits can be viewed by the person who has them as human and amusing. And I'd like to close with the words that are inscribed on the plaque that Dr. Bob had on his desk. And actually, I didn't even realize he had this plaque until I was asked to do this topic. And somebody had said this is the best definition of humility that they had heard. So Here it is, humility. Perceptual quietness of heart. It is to have no trouble. It is never to be fretted or vexed, irritable or sore. To wonder at nothing that is done to me. To feel nothing done against me. It is to be at rest when nobody praises me. And when I am blamed or despised, it is to have a blessed home in myself where I can go in and shut the door and pray to my Father in secret and be at peace, as in a deep sea of calmness when all around and all about seeming trouble. Thank you so much.
All right. All right. I heard you say that. Earlier, I asked you to turn your cell phones off. I then promptly displayed that you should turn the music player off, if any of you heard that go off up here. I sat down and it started playing music. So, you know, make sure to turn the music off too, please. Our next speaker is Evelyn. And I'm going out of format a little bit. But when I was sitting up here beforehand, and I don't want to put Evelyn on the hot seat by saying something personal, but I'm going to. She came up and said, "Where's the moderator?" And just her voice right then was like half love, half strength. I was going to say steel, but I thought maybe that was too much, so strength. And I said, "Who is this? Who is that?" And it was Evelyn. And I'm from Seattle. If I ever move out here, I know exactly who's going to sponsor me. Evelyn is from Savannah. She's been sober 43 years. She didn't get sober. She got sober in Harlem, New York, and moved here. Moved to New Jersey in 87. She is 74 and works and has been for 3 years in a maximum security prison, so you know she is tough. Her nickname there, everyone gets nicknames, her nickname is Gigi, which means gangster grandma. So, I didn't mean to put you on a hot seat, but you know, here's where we are. So now you get to come up and talk to us. Thank you, Evelyn. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Evelyn, and I am an alcoholic. And I'm very grateful and honored to be here. I want to thank the two speakers that went before me. I got so much from their talk, and I want to thank the moderator, who was really, he's just funny, and we became friends instantaneously. And I'd be happy to sponsor him. My name is Evelyn, and I am an alcoholic, and like many of you who, like the two speakers that went before me and talked about getting the call, when I was on the computer at prison, and I shouldn't have been on the computer at prison, right? But I always sneak on the computer and look at my emails, and I got the email from Eva of New York asking me if I would speak here on this topic. And I actually thought somebody was kidding. You know, I thought it was a joke or whatever, and I was getting ready to delete it. And there was a phone number there, and I called, and I got Eva. And she asked me, would I speak on humility? And I said, is there any other topic I could speak on? You know. But she said, no, it's humility. So I accepted, because as my friend said, I learned early on in this fellowship that whenever I'm asked to do something, I do it. And if I think I don't know how, It's because Spirit wants me to learn something from doing it. It is not presented to me to beat me down. It's presented to me as a lesson, and it's something for me to learn. And I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and so I've learned humility. I've learned so many, many things in AA that I share with people I sponsor, I share with people in my home group that have helped me to grow. The moderator said, Alan said, I was born and bred in Harlem. Now, when I speak to several audiences in the South, they think, well, that alone, having been born and bred in Harlem, is enough reason why you would be an Alcoholics Anonymous. And as I said, yes, I was born and bred in Harlem. I'm an only child. I did not come from a dysfunctional family. I never heard the word dysfunctional. I never heard the word depression. I really never heard the word too much humility until I came into AA. These are words that I heard in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I actually had to go to a dictionary to find out what those words meant. I didn't know what it meant. People, and I hear people always say, well, I came from a dysfunctional family. My father, I never saw my father smoke a cigarette. I never saw my father take a drink. He wasn't an alcoholic, or he was just an average person who nobody knew daddy to ever drink or smoke a cigarette. My mother was a social drinker. Every now and then she would take a drink. So I didn't grow up in a home where I saw a lot of drinking and drugging and cursing and carrying on and all of this. I was loved. And I never fail to mention when I speak that my parents loved me. They did not just tell me they loved me. I got hugs and kisses every single day. So the things that I learned that caused me to be standing before you today, I learned in the streets of Harlem. Okay, those are where I learned those things. And humility was not one of them. Okay? Definitely not one of them. Having grown up an only child, I really didn't have role models. I didn't have a big sister or a big brother or somebody I could model myself after. My parents were blue-collar workers. They worked every day. So I was a latchkey child. I was born in 1941. And in those days, you had to go a long ways to find an only child. There were not any. I didn't know anybody that didn't have brothers or sisters. I was the only person that I knew that didn't have a brother or sister. Most people had like 10 kids, 8 kids, you know. I lived in a building in 108, an apartment. There was 15 of them. The boys lived in apartment 5 and the girls lived in apartment 6, okay? And it was like going to the circus when I went to their house, you know? I mean, you could jump on the bed. You couldn't jump on my mother's bed with your shoes on it. We could jump on the bed with our shoes on, drop paper on the floor and not pick it up. No beds were, dishes in the sink. You didn't see that stuff in my mother's house. So I came from a very structured house where I learned all of the things that I learned as I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, how to be a person of humility and quality today. I learned from role models. One of the role models and where I learned the word humility was from my sponsor. And I go very few places, very few places, and not mention Joseph Chapman's name and not mention Liz Bailey's name, because these are the two people who picked me up, brushed me off, and sent me on my way in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came into AA, like I said, I didn't know the word humility. In fact, I'll tell you something. When I called Liz and I said, Liz, you know, I got something from GSO. And they told me that they want me to speak at one of the workshops. She said, now, don't curse. I don't want you to curse it now. Okay? So I'm being reminded all the time of humility, of who I... Humility to me is my potential, is what I'm striving to be. I have not gotten there yet. See, I am not impressed with being 43 years sober. A lot of people are impressed with that, but I'm not. I can go today places in Harlem and tell certain people that I used to drink and sniff cocaine with that I'm sober 43 years, and they say, yeah, what else is new? I got a bridge in Brooklyn, I'd like to say. You know, I can't convince them, and I don't try to convince them that I am no longer doing the things that I used to do. What I try to do is live up to what you have given me. The humility that I got, you gave it to me. I did not get it on my own. The quality of life that I got today, you gave it to me. I would not have anything. When I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, let me back up. Because I lived the kind of life that I lived, I thought that right was wrong and wrong was right. And I believed that. I believed if I didn't have anything and you had something, I was supposed to take it from you. I believed that. On my first anniversary, and I'm going to tell you about humility because I don't know much about it. Today, I'm learning just like everybody else. I stole everything I wore at my first anniversary. My wig, my dress, my shoes. I went down to Orbach's on 34th Street and Macy's on 34th Street. I stole me a wig. I knew how to leave my wig, take an old wig and leave it in there, come out with a brand new one. I knew how to wear old pairs of shoes, leave it there, and come out with a brand new pair. So when I got home, I told Joe, I said, Joe, you know, I'm going to be clean tonight. You know? I'm going to be clean. I said, Joe, I got out of Macy's with this bad dress. I got a pair of shoes. Joe said, wait a minute, baby, this is not the way we suppose you do it. I'm celebrating my first anniversary. Everything I had on, I stole. Everything I had on. And was glad to have it. Okay? And stood up for my first anniversary and had 8 speakers. Okay? Joyce had 11. And I didn't know. See, I grew up in AA. One of the things I know about myself is that I'm a slow learner. I'm a very slow learner. And I, not being a person of humility, I wanted to learn fast. I wanted to be somebody who was quick and witty and this and that and the other, but I was never that person. But one of the things I learned about me that God has given me, see, everything I got, there is nothing that I own and got today that my higher power, who I choose to call God, has not given me. Nothing. I didn't earn anything on my own. I'm humble enough to know that today. And that is why I cherish it. Because you gave it to me. It isn't something I hustled for. It's something I came in here not knowing which door to go in. I used to go to the meetings on the wrong day. Liz talk about knitting without needles. I would go to a Tuesday meeting on a Thursday and standing out there and waiting for the meeting to open. And I'm not, because I was so, I shook for 8 months after I stopped drinking. If I came down the aisle with a cup of coffee, I cleared the way. Everybody got out of my way. Because this is how I was shaking. Okay? And I knew a drink or a hit of coke would make it all right, would mellow me right out. But I also knew that if I stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous, if I listened to what you people had to say, that I would grow into being the kind of people you are. See, when I look out at your faces, each and every one of you, I look at your eyes, I look at your face, I know that you love me. I don't need to know your name. I may never see none of you again in life. I may. I know you love me because I love you. That's how I know you love me. I learned that. I was humbled enough to allow myself to love. If you did not have something to give me, I had no use for you. And I thought you felt the same way about me. It wasn't something that it was a tit for tat. It was a way of life. And I say to this day, and I say to anybody that's new here, if you can learn the way of life of alcohol and drug abuse and street life, you can learn the way of AA life. I learned the way of AA life. I live a AA life from learning what humility meant. Humility meant to me understanding it is not me. When I wake up in the morning and I open my eyes, and I know what I did last night, know who I did it with, I am one grateful sister. And that is not it. And that's every morning. Because you know how many mornings I woke up and the first thing I would do, see, I used to have a pink ceiling. And when I would wake up in the morning and that ceiling, that's the first thing. I never looked at who was next to me because God knows I did not want to see who was next to me. But I knew if I looked up at that ceiling and that ceiling was pink, I was home. And I was grateful. Okay? And so when I look up and I open my eyes and I know I'm staying at the dorm out at the university. And I look up at that ceiling and I say, oh, I'm in Atlanta. I'm in the dorm. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. And then I begin my day. I don't need to get, God is not interested in my posture. I don't need to get on my knees. God don't care nothing about whether I'm sitting on the toilet or standing up. God just wants me to be grateful. That's all God wants from me. And that is what I am. I'm a humble, grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous every single day of my life. Now, has it all been peaches and cream? No, it has not. You can imagine 43 years of life. I've been through deaths. I've been through births. I've been through bankruptcies. I've been through lawsuits. I've been through whatever. But I live to stand before you 74 years, and I work full-time at a maximum security prison. Now, how sweet is that? How sweet is that? And I'm not afraid to go into prison. See, I'm not afraid. I walk in there humbly, and they don't mess with me. I teach. And I teach alcoholism and drug abuse. We got 1,700 inmates. 400 of them is in the RSAT program. That's Recovery Substance Abuse Treatment Program. I go into RSAT and I teach. When I get through telling them about my story, gangster grandma, here I come. The reason I wondered why God had me there, and I'm finding out why God has me there. Because in my home group, I've been there about 2.5 years now, 6 inmates have been coming to my home group. Now, I'm not mentioning no names, okay? When I see them come through the door, I shake their hand, but I hold my pocketbook. Okay? I hold my pocketbook. Okay? I shake their hand and I give them a hug, but I know who I'm dealing with, okay? And I love them. But every time I see those six inmates walk through my home group, I am so grateful. I know my purpose in life. So I'm humble enough to say thank you, God, for giving me this wonderful life of Alcoholics Anonymous, because where would I be without it? Thank you so much for my life.
Well, in a moment we're going to close. I really shouldn't even try to follow that, but what I wanted to say, I wanted to say one thing before we close, which is just a quick example of, for me, what forced me to wind up being humble without, I didn't mean to. Really, I didn't. I'm the chair for my area right now, and before that I was the secretary for it. And when you're chairing a meeting, a business meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, for an area event or an area business meeting, it's not possible to think about yourself and serve the people that are in front of you who are staring at you, expecting you to get them through a very hard day. And whenever I would be up in front and start thinking about myself, I would lose connection with you right here in front of me. So now I wouldn't know how you felt about what was happening because I was away somewhere. I was thinking about me. So through service work, I've been physically forced to think about you instead of me, and that has made me 100 times more well than I have ever thought that I could be. So I guess that's a plug for service work. Let's hear it for our amazing panel.